Today on Movie World, as we talk about Marty Supreme and The Testament of Ann Lee. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
It's getting to be that time of the year when all the big Oscar-seeking movies are being dumped on us.
Yes, we have
been
busy.
They're coming fast, yes.
I'm exhausted.
And you don't even do half
of them. I was going to say, it's true.
No, yeah. Rashmi
has been wandering around the house again, full on, like watching movies and every screen available to her. It's like,
and she's out of town for 3 days with my dog just to chill. And in the hotel room, I was watching movies.
Two of you, it's honestly.
Absurd. Yeah, well,
you
late
take,
at night when it was dark.
You take film criticism far more seriously than you should.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding. Of course, you take it seriously.
It is our job.
It's your public duty.
Yes, our public duty and joy, yes.
Yes.
No, it's great. I just can't. I get I think my film debt threshold is like
one movie a week.
I love doing this at like a couple of movies a week. It's when
we're watching three a day.
When you get to three, four, five, I saturate, and then I find it hard to pay attention to anything.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
but that's how we find the gems that we tell you about.
This is true.
And I do have a gem of a movie to share.
And
the two movies we're going to be talking about, they're both releasing on Christmas Day. Hollywood has put a lot of faith in both of them.
Okay.
Different ways. And they're releasing them along with Avatar.
We're going to tell you whether it's worth your time. Yes.
So those are the three big movies releasing.
Avatar, Marty Supreme, and The Testament.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen the two movies from today's podcast. So I'm interested
and
to hear.
And we'll save you or help you decide whether
what
you should or not.
Okay. Well, it's been a while since we had time to do a streaming pick, so without further ado, let's do our usual segment of I can't find anything to watch on video on demand. Because it has been a while, we'll remind you what we do here is as we navigate our various streaming services, Max, Amazon Prime, Netflix, YouTube,
Paramount Plus, Hulu, Disney,
the whole gamut. Yes. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, we often find ourselves sitting with the remote control and trying to pick a movie. So let's save you a little time today and we'll come up with three individual picks that we think would be worth your while. So what's on your list?
My pick will be coming to Netflix in time for this podcast and it is called Left-Handed Girl. It is a foreign language movie about a single mother and her two daughters who return to Taipei. This is divine.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite movies of the year.
What?
It's so good. It's got so much to say about so many things. And it has one of the best little actors of this year, I think.
Yeah, it's an ensemble piece. I saw this at the San Diego Asian Film Festival. It was the closing night film. And by the way, this film is Taiwan's pick for
Oscars.
For the Oscars for best foreign film.
Oh, wow.
And the other curious thing about this is that it's written and directed by this Taiwanese filmmaker who worked with Sean Baker, Sean Baker, who won three Oscars last year for Anora. And Sean Baker, interestingly, is co-writer and editor for this movie. But it's all out and out a Taiwanese film. It's about 100 things. And we just, on an earlier episode, we were talking about Jay Kelly, which is about 100 things, which all of them dropped to the floor. This one, it holds all of these things together. It's shot guerrilla style. It's about families and secrets and guilt and growing up and parenting and everything. And it just all beautifully comes together.
So good.
So good.
So good. Okay, what's your pick?
This time of the year, I love one of my favorite genre of movies is movies about families getting together either for Thanksgiving or for the holidays and about them fighting and secrets getting revealed. And I just love that genre. There's been 100 movies like that. Well, there is a new movie, which is already on Netflix. It's called Bad Shabbos.
Oh, Bad Shabbos. Yeah.
Bad Shabbos. And it's by writer-director Daniel Robbins. And it's about this interfaith couple. And she's inviting her non-Jewish fiance for the first time to her parents, and something really bad happens and they're trying to hide it. And it's hilarious and it's funny and the dialogue is wonderful and it's no great shakes, but it's such a good 2 hours spent watching a movie. So I would strongly recommend it. It's Bad Shabbos.
Yes, and one of our avid dear listeners, Michelle, you know who you are, actually wrote to me and said, you need to watch this movie, yeah, as well as you, Yasmin.
You need to watch this movie.
So it's, yes, thank you for that recommendation, Michelle. And if you guys all have recommendations, please do send them to us as well. So this is on my list.
I'm a bit of a cool killjoy. I don't usually laugh in movies. I was laughing.
Yeah.
At
my goal in life sometimes is to make you laugh.
I know. I'm just sitting there like a grouch.
Hard work. You make me work hard to make you laugh.
I know.
See, that's one of my joys in life.
Oh, thank you. So Bad Shabbos. Yes.
Wonderful. Okay.
Because the Jews say good Shabbos on
Shabbos. On Shabbat. Yeah.
So this is a bad Shabbos. Anyway, carry on. Yes.
Okay. My pick is a very Joe pick. No, it's not a Christopher Nolan movie. Okay. I have to get that out. So my pick is on YouTube. It came to me actually directly in my YouTube recommendation. Yeah. So interestingly, there was a film released, I think last year at the Tribeca Film Festival, a movie by the name of The Thinking Game. It was in many ways a sequel to the wonderful movie that I recommended several years ago now called AlphaGo.
I'd seen AlphaGo.
Yeah.
So
it's a documentary.
Oh, okay. It's following the same people who did the DeepMind. So AlphaGo was very much about how we teach computers to play games and how they can prevail. Well, with all the advent of AI and all of the fuss and buzz that's going on in the world right now, this movie actually came a year ago, but it was talking about what they did beyond AlphaGo, which was trying to tackle other problems. And Google DeepMind founder Demis Hassabis has essentially moved on from like just video games and trying to solve real world problems, right? So AlphaGo was how we taught these computers to become world class like video gamers, and they achieved that. It was remarkable and how they did that. What do we do with that kind of technology, right? What do we do with intelligent computers? What do we do with things that can learn in ways that we can't learn? Well, they tackled the goal of protein folding. So that team went on to develop a program called AlphaFold, which has ostensibly been revolutionary in the world of biological protein folding. So one of the biggest problems in biology is, you know, we can sequence proteins, but we don't know how they fit together.
Three-dimensionally.
And they effectively trained the same kind of technology, and this is the story of that. Okay. So the film is called The Thinking Game. It's available on YouTube. I will post a link in the show notes and on our website. It is absolutely worth your while. It's a 1 hour and 24 minute documentary. If you haven't seen the wonderful AlphaGo, then see that first. That is also fully available on YouTube and the same channel, the Google DeepMind channel. Both of which are absolutely fascinating looks into the world of AI, not in terms of the large language models like ChatGPT and all of that stuff, but in terms of machine learning and how that can be applied to real world. And it's a very Joe pick, which means it's kind of geeky, but it's absolutely entertaining. AlphaGo is kind of set up like a sports drama. Now, this one is maybe less so, although there is some elements of that too. And a very fascinating portrait of Demis Hassabis, who really is the brainchild behind all of this stuff. So Rashmi, your pick was
Left-Handed Girl on Netflix.
Yazdi?
Bad Shabbos on Netflix.
And mine was The Thinking Game on YouTube.
Okay. Nominating many from YouTube now, I know.
Which is great.
Yeah. I watch a lot of YouTube, and occasionally there's some real like full-length gems that pick, you know, that pop up.
Interesting.
You know, whether they're released officially or by somebody perhaps uploading something that they shouldn't. But look, I mean, absolutely. It's actually a competitive service. I think, you know, there will be a time when YouTube does more and more full-length movies. I see it heading that way. All right, two movies to talk about today, Marty Supreme and The Testament of Anne Lee. So I think I have to quickly introduce Marty Supreme. This is a movie directed by Josh Safdie. So we saw a movie by the other Safdie brother, which is escaping
me. Benny Safdie. Which was The Smashing Machine with The Rock.
Thank you very much. Yes, we saw that recently. The two brothers used to make films together like Uncut Gems and
Good Time.
Both of them super, super fun movies. So they've now separated in terms of gone off to direct their own separate movies.
I don't know if it's a one-off or if that's forever. We'll find out.
Who knows? Yeah, they're clearly again got trying to separate maybe their voices and their own films, and why not? So Marty Supreme stars Timothy Chalamet as Marty Mauser, a rising table tennis talent in 1950s New York. The film follows his progression through competitive circles that range from casual basement matches to more organized and high-pressure tournaments. Gwyneth Paltrow, Odessa Azion, and others appear as figures who cross Marty's path and shape the experiences that he has within the sport and the city. The story tracks his training, encounters with the table tennis community, and the broader social environment surrounding him at the time. What did you guys think of Marty Supreme?
Right, that Oscar nomination for Timothy Chalamet and the directing and Josh Safdie immediately.
And Best Picture.
Yes, this is an aggressive, dynamic, fast-moving, interesting movie.
Whoa.
Yeah. I can't say I loved it, but I think it is a marvelous piece of filmmaking.
And sorry, I know, yes, you're going to comment, but it's interesting to me that both Safdie brothers have taken an esoteric sports personality and made a movie about them. Yeah. So The Smashing Machine was about another real character.
Yeah.
Chalamet's all about the real person as well, right?
Or it's loosely based.
It's fictional, but it's very loosely based on an actual person, actual ping pong player.
Yes.
We had two screenings at the same time. Yes. The evening we saw it, and I quickly looked up, like, what is this movie about Marty Supreme, which came out of nowhere? And I'm like, it's about a ping pong player in the 50s. Like, why?
Why would I see that?
The most appetizing topic to make a movie on.
Yeah.
And I'm going to repeat one of my favorite movie quotes is from Roger Ebert, who always said, it's not what a movie is about. It's about how it is about what it is about. And this movie is such a great example of that. We'll talk more, but this movie is firing on all cylinders. It's firing on all cylinders with the script, with the acting, with the music, with the production design.
Costume.
The costume. There's only one other movie I've seen which even
editing
reaches up with the same level of, you know, this movie in terms of production design. It's, you know, it's like you get on this roller coaster and you don't get off.
So aggressive, Yassi. I don't know about you, but I felt I was literally being slapped on my face, like this way and this way and this way. It is just coming at you, and it's so aggressive, like you have to hold on to your seat. And it's not short, it's quite a long movie. And it's
2.5 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so well acted. I mean, Odessa Azion.
Azion, yeah.
Phenomenal. Kevin O'Leary is in this. Kevin O'Leary is one of the Shark Tank sharks. He's amazing in this movie. I kept thinking, I know this guy.
Fran Drescher is in this.
Guy? Yeah.
Reza Goring, who was in The Son of Saul.
Remember? Oh, wow. Yeah, he is in this movie. Yeah.
So it's very, very inspired casting.
Yeah.
Go on, please.
No, I was just going to say, it's so dynamic. It keeps you just on your toes. I mean, this is phenomenal. This is phenomenal filmmaking. Again, I can't say it's my favorite movie of the year and that I love it, but it's such a good movie.
I don't know
if that makes sense.
Yeah, I do think it's one of my favorite movies of the year, and I absolutely love it because I think a lot of movies are passive, and there are a lot of movies are kind of, they're like, be gentle and, you know, be understated. And this movie is the exact opposite, right? I mean, we talked about Uncut Gems. Now I understand who was of the two brothers.
Correct.
Who was pushing for Uncut Gems? It was not Benny. It was Josh.
Yes.
And, you know, they're doing like what the Coen brothers did. Each brother made a separate movie, but based on comparing this movie with The Smashing Machine, I'm sorry, I'm willing to say
agree. That one isn't going to see any award love. This one is going to rise to the top.
And it's like, so essentially the entire movie is about this kid who is so cocky and he's so absolutely driven to become a famous ping pong tournament player that the entire movie, it's 2.5 hours of him hustling. He is hustling. Nothing is too sacred.
Correct.
Nothing is beyond the means. He wants to get to the tournament in London, and then he wants to get to the tournament in Tokyo. That's what the whole movie is about. But his hustling becomes so frantic, and it's so beautifully put together that I was in awe of the filmmaking. I was like, it's like a jet propulsion. The movie is just throwing you one after the other in terms of what, and you know, he's not a likable character, but you can understand why there are some people who become insanely successful, because for them, failure is not an option. They're like, I don't care. No risk is high enough for me to get what I want. And I wish I was a little bit like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I literally have in my notes, my jaw is open. Like, I literally was in the movie and I'm watching the movie and my jaw is literally open at how amazing this movie is making me feel about watching the movie itself. I do believe at times it gets a little bit overcooked.
Often, yeah.
And this really is like, this is the type of person who's a cockroach, right? Whatever you do to him, he survives. But it's about the drive and his desire to be where he wants to be. And how nothing is insurmountable for him.
Yeah.
It's incredible to capture that on movie.
Wow. I mean, I think for me, it's not a question of whether Timothée Chalamet will get nominated. For me, the question is whether he's going to win the best actor, right? He has had two previous nominations.
Yeah. What?
Is it one for... For a, what man? Something. Yeah, the Bob Dylan biopic.
Yeah.
And one for Call Me By Your Name.
Was that it?
Something Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I think not to give Chalamet too much credit, because I'm a very reluctant admirer of Chalamet. I think his stardom is
a complete unknown.
His stardom is so perplexing to me because he looks like 11-year-old scrawny kid, right?
Yeah.
He needs to lift a dumbbell, for crying out loud. And it's hard for somebody with this physicality to portray a character who is like a jet propulsion engine. So his physicality is working against him, and he can't help being scrawny. And in spite of that, he's so believable. He prevails. Now, he is playing ping pong through much of the movie. I don't know if it was CGI or if he actually learned to play
that,
it, but it was ridiculous. I'm like, really? Chalamet can play like that?
But it was like Zendaya in Challengers. And it was like Emma Stone in the, remember the tennis one about Billie Jean King?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
War of the Sexes.
I mean, all the side characters are terrific. There are a lot of actors I didn't recognize, like Odessa Ozion, who plays his girlfriend / whatever. She was terrific. That's a very difficult role.
Yes.
That's a very difficult role. And she was so on top of it. Gwyneth Paltrow, I know you're not the world's biggest fan of Gwyneth Paltrow, but she,
I wasn't going to go there.
I haven't seen her. I mean, she hasn't had a big enough role in a while.
Yeah, this is her comeback, Sidley.
I'm not saying she's brilliant. I'm saying she's perfect for the role.
She's
really right for that particular role.
I wouldn't give her any award, love, Yasti.
Yeah, Rashmi, put your claws away.
I'm just saying she's very good in the movie. It's not an award-worthy performance, whereas all of the others I say are.
Tyler, the Creator, who does a lot of music and rap, and he's in the movie and he's amazing in it.
Yeah.
So, again, should I be raving about a movie about ping pong in the 50s?
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. It's how you put that movie together.
The soundtrack is excellent. He uses Tears for Fears. This is a movie set in the 1950s. It's anachronistic in terms of its soundtrack. So it's got like Tears for Fears, which is so... All the pop music that he's used is so good.
This is what I wrote in my notes, that the music is truly inspiring by way of... It's almost like an extra voice of the director. The director is using, you know, camera and all of that stuff, but he's using the music as an extra arm that he had. It's really very, and sometimes movies overdo it, where you know the song choices are too on the point, and it's like if somebody's leaving, the song sings I'm leaving, you know, but it's just very, very inspired.
Yeah, like it's such a, it feels like a dirty movie. I don't know how to explain this.
Gritty.
It's very gritty and dirty. And I just wanted to shower when I came back home from this, because there's something filthy about this character.
He's great.
I have to say, Chalamet steals the show. I think he might win it, Yasti.
Well,
I think this might be a win for Chalamet.
It's about a time.
A flash in the pan. This guy is a good actor.
Yeah,
even though we don't want to love him.
Considering his physicality, I would honestly, if I'd read the script, I would have not picked him. I'm like, no, not Chalamet.
But you need that physicality to play ping pong. It's not like a muscle guy, right? It's someone who's very scrawny, who can make those shots and, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's sum this one up.
Honestly, for me, you said it, for you to you, it sounds dirty. For me, it, it sounds like a pre-made classic. Like for me, the minute I came out, I'm like, people are going to be talking about this movie forever. I hate to lavish so much praise on it, but it really is firing on all cylinders, and every aspect of it is just pushed up to a knot. Like the editing is perfect, the music, the acting, the writing, all of it. The casting is excellent. 9 out of 10. Very, very easy 9 out of 10.
Yeah, for me, it's even a 9.5, which I would back down to a 9.
Stop it with the halves, Rashmi.
I know.
You are possessed.
A patent on those.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm not giving it a 10.
Don't give
but
it
it's,
a 10.
It's a 9. It's a solid 9 out of 10.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, for me, if somebody asks me around the holidays, which movie should I watch? You know, we don't make it to the movies. I would say, go see this one. I think this is the movie of the year,
but
probably.
But it is a hard R.
But yeah, don't take your kids.
Don't take
at
grandma.
All. Yeah, don't take the language, everything. It's
a hard R. Yeah, it earns its R.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Okay.
Sorry, I missed that one.
Yeah.
Let's talk then about our next movie, The Testament of Anne Lee. So briefly, I think I'm going to be introducing this one as well. The Testament of Anne Lee is directed by Monica Fastvold, and it centers on the life of...
Mona Fastvold.
Mona, sorry, thank you. Yes, sorry, Mona Fastvold. Centers on the life of Anne Lee, the founder of the Shaker Movement. Amanda Seyfried portrays Anne Lee as she establishes a religious community built around her teachings. The film depicts the structure of the group, spiritual practices that defined it, and the challenges of a community... the challenges of the community encountered both internally and externally. It follows the historical circumstances of who influenced the formation of the movement and the individuals who joined it. What did you guys think of The Testament of Anne Lee?
This movie is not going to work for many people. It's really going to try a lot of people's patience. It's long, but I was very fascinated by it because we seldom see movies about somebody who becomes a religious leader. And when we see movies like that, it's often seen from the prism of, you know, cynicism or contempt, or like, you know, this person became a cult leader and then they abused or whatever. There is not a cynical bone in this movie because it really talks about this woman who came from Great Britain to, you know, Eastern United States and set up the whole Shaker movement. So it's very hard to do a movie. And clearly there are some issues, you know, with what she preached and so forth. But to make a movie about a person who developed a major sect of Christianity in the United States, I think is a very, very high bar. And I don't know if you're ready for this. It's a musical. So there's a lot of singing, and the way the Shakers are called the Shakers because they shook with the fervor of God and they sang a lot. So there's a lot of singing, which again, is going to make people laugh. But for me, it was genuinely very, very fascinating.
So this is written by the same person
Correct.
Who wrote The Brutalist. I don't know if you mentioned
So their
that.
Husband and wife, Brady Corbett and Mona Fastvold, a husband and wife, and they both worked on both films.
Right. And remember, The Brutalist got a lot of award love last year, 2024. So when the opening scene is a dance, and as soon as it started, I thought, ooh, this is like Amelia Perez. It had that same feeling. And I was like, ooh, I did love Amelia Perez last year. And then it just turned insufferable. It was insufferable. And here's how insufferable it was. I actually had a good snooze, but every time I opened my eyes, I was watching the same scene.
No, you were not.
It literally felt like, okay, so
insufferable
I
in the sense of it dragged, or
it
insufferable
just dragged.
In the sense of it was just
there was
bonkers,
no, I couldn't tell what the story was. It was just this woman, and Amanda Seyfried is great in
she's
it.
She's excellent.
She's trying to do a Mancunian, an accent from Manchester. Not good. I always feel like when you give an actor an accent, they're so concerned about the accent that I think it compromises their acting sometimes. And this is one of those times. So she's great in it, but the story should have moved me, and it should have been rapturous, right? It's about a religion and people finding great joy and pleasure from that religion. And all it seemed to be was people in a room moving like they're voguing, but not quite voguing, to some weird chanting. And I would shut my eyes because I couldn't hang on to anything. And then when I opened my eyes, it felt like I was watching the same scene in the movie.
But that sounds really trippy.
It is trippy.
Is it trippy?
Well,
that's not what I heard from Yasti at all.
No, it's not meant to be surreal or trippy or anything. I think what it is, is it's... So I anyway, finish what you're saying.
No, I'm just saying, it was just insufferable for me. I wouldn't recommend this to anyone. This is even more sedative than the Chloe Zhao movie.
The Hamnet.
Yeah. This is even more sedative than Hamnet. This is awful. Awful.
I think it's very difficult to depict religious fervor in a movie. And everybody who is seeing it will be like, these people are crazy, or these people are in a cult, or why are they like just, you know, shaking? And, you know, it just feels so absurd. But the movie, I think, could actually, you know, when you're making a movie about a person who did this, you could either make this like a glorifying thing, like, oh, this person was a saint, right? Yeah. Great were they. I don't think the movie is doing that. Or the movie can invite you to judge what happened and make your own decision. I think the movie is doing a little bit of that. But I think what the movie is actually doing is in the title of the movie, which is The Testament of Ann Lee. It just wants to be a testament of historically what happened. So it's playing out like a documentary. And I think therefore it's very constrained by what happened in reality. And there's a lot of repeat. The kind of singing she did in Manchester and when she came to the US, with the other people, they always sing, they always do this thing, and there's a
weird dance with it. And the dancing was good.
The dancing,
I can't
actually
fault
good.
The dance. The
it's
dance
all
is
choreographed.
Actually quite mesmerizing to watch.
Yeah.
But
I think there are interesting pieces.
There's no story.
Well, the interesting story is that, you know, I mean, I don't want to ruin it as a spoiler, but she lost.
I don't think you can.
She lost 4 kids. And, you know, she went through great sorrow. And she was so traumatized by the fact that she lost 4 kids that she associated having sex with bad things happening. And so she actually propagated saying sex, even within a marriage, is inherently bad for your spiritual growth. So there's a lot of controversial things in her in her thinking, which would have ordinarily kind of, you know, not had her gain a following. But her following grew in those rural parts of eastern United States. I mean, the closing credits say that there's only about 100 true Shaker churches remaining in the United States.
Which is quite a lot.
But at its peak, it was a lot more. So I'm just fascinated by people who inspire, because for me, anybody who tells me that I'm a spiritual leader, I automatically look at them with like suspicion and contempt. Like, I don't need somebody to tell me how I should live my life. But this woman clearly did. She inspired legions of people to join her across towns and cities. So I found that very fascinating. So it is very documentary like in that it follows her life all the way to the end.
Okay.
Yeah, and what's her name, isn't it? Thomasin McKenzie.
Sorry,
I forgot to mention her.
She's good. The acting, I mean, the acting is good. The dancing is good. The film is awful. for me, it's insufferable. 2 out of 10.
No, it's not.
Good grief.
No, it's
me.
Awful. It's awful. I wouldn't tell. Again, if you are on an airplane and you want to sleep, then watch this movie. Yeah,
I'm going to look up Rotten Tomatoes.
I've looked it up.
How much is it?
80-something.
Okay.
But it's insufferable critics like Yazdi. Come on, Yazdi. Tell me what you're going to...
I was genuinely fascinated by it. And I was actually, as I was watching it, I was expecting that at some point, this woman will be found to be a fake, or found to like have this deep history, or found that she killed kids in her backyard or something. And then it took me a long time to realize that, no, this movie is not looking at her with contempt. It's actually looking at her with a fair degree of, I don't want to say reverence, but, you know, like, look how amazing she was, right? Being a woman, you know, to begin with.
Yeah.
And, you know, Amanda Seyfried gives her all. It's a very, very honest, very,
yes,
very, she's a great singer,
yes,
and she's, you
good
know,
dancer.
Good dancer, all of that. So for me, it was just like a fascinating look at how a religious sect would even come to form in those times. And the production design and all is very good. So I would give it a 6 out of 10. Amanda Seyfried, 9 out of 10.
Wow.
It's a great acting
and
vehicle
for her. And it's very well
her.
Made.
Yeah. It's yeah. just no story, nothing to hang on to. I mean, literally, this is the thing. I closed my eyes and then I'd open them and it's literally, I'm watching the same scene on the screen. I'm like, oh, I haven't been asleep that long. And then, you know, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes.
2 hours and 15
right.
minutes.
Right. So I opened and closed my eyes many times and I literally felt like it hadn't moved.
I mean, not to belabor this, but again, I think we are so trained to look at any kind of a prophet or a messiah from a place
skepticism.
Skepticism.
Yeah, yeah.
that for me, for somebody to make a movie where they're saying this person didn't abuse power, this person didn't use people, for me, that's so novel that it's just saying this is how this person came to be. So I kind of like that the movie is very uncynical about it.
So here's the thing that would have made it better for me. Let's not just poo-poo on it. I think what would have made it better for me is, what is it about that person that makes others change their lives? That was not captured at all. So, all right. But that, yeah. let's...
Right. I mean, there's a whole thing about her brother, which I find fascinating. Yeah, it's her story. Yeah.
There endeth the review.
Endeth our podcast.
Yes, please. All right. Well, once again, thank you for listening to Movie Wala. So we'll be back, I'm sure, in the not too distant future. Hopefully the San Diego Film Critics, we'll be able to talk about that next, because I think that's coming up soon, the vote. So
yes,
excited
to lists are out.
Be excited to see what you guys come up with again.
Yes.
All right. Until our next podcast, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well. I'm not going to do that.